Greetings, and welcome to the Pieris Pharmaceuticals Incorporated 2015 third quarter conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Darlene Deptula-Hicks, CFO for Pieris Pharmaceuticals. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Donna. And good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our third quarter 2015 earnings conference call and corporate update. With me today is Steve Yoder, CEO. We announced financial results for the third quarter ended September 30th, 2015, yesterday after the market closed. You can access the press release on the investor relations page of our website. Before we begin to review the financial results and business highlights, in compliance with the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995, I would like to caution that comments made during this conference call by management may contain forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties regarding the operations and future results of operations of Pieris, including statements relating to the timing and progress of our clinical trials and preclinical trials. Actual results or events may differ materially from results or events discussed in the forward-looking statements. Factors that might cause such differences include those set forth from time to time in the company's filings with the SEC, including without limitation, the company's forms 10-K, 10-Q, and 8-K. Furthermore, the content of this conference call contains time-sensitive information that is accurate only as of the date of this live broadcast, November 12, 2015. Pieris undertakes no obligation to revise or update any statements to reflect events or circumstances after the date of this conference call. With that, I will now hand the call over to Steve Yoder, CEO.
Thank you, Darlene, and good morning to everyone. Thanks for joining us for another update call. The third quarter of 2015 was one of significant development for Pieris Pharmaceuticals. We've strengthened our management team with key additions. We've relocated our headquarters to the United States and advanced our pipeline of anticalin-based therapeutics across the board, having presented several data sets at a number of scientific conferences. Following our third quarter earnings and corporate update, we will hold a brief question and answer session to give you time to ask questions. So to remind everyone, Pieris Pharmaceuticals is a clinical stage biotechnology company that discovers and develops anticalin-based drugs to target validated disease pathways in unique and transformative ways, particularly distinct from monoclonal antibodies. Anticalins are recombinant engineered versions of human lipocalins, which are non-immunogenic proteins that naturally bind, store, and transport a wide spectrum of molecules, and in general possess excellent drug-like properties. Aside from the several partnered anticalin programs in development, our pipeline of fully proprietary programs includes immuno-oncology multispecifics tailored for the tumor microenvironment, an inhaled anticalin to treat uncontrolled asthma, and a half-life optimized anticalin to treat anemia. I'd like to begin this session by recognizing the new members of our management team. Darlene Deptula-Hicks, who is with me today and has served as our acting CFO since November of 2014, has officially joined Pieris as a Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Prior to joining Pieris, she served as the CFO to a number of private and publicly traded life science companies in the Boston area, including Claritas Genomics, ICAD Inc., Microline Surgical, ONI Medical Systems, and Implant Sciences Corporation. And we're happy to have her joining the team officially. Next, we're excited to have appointed Lou Matus, MD, who joined as Senior Vice President and Chief Development Officer. Dr. Matus has spent 18 years at Alexion Pharmaceuticals, most recently as Executive Director of Strategic Evaluation, and he was previously the company's Chief Scientific Officer, a position during which he had a leading role in discovering Alexion's first-in-class complement inhibitor monoclonal antibody, Soliris. His previous positions also include serving as CEO of CGI Pharmaceuticals and CEO of the Immune Tolerance Institute. And before that, he had a senior research and clinical positions at the NCI, the NIH, and the FDA Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, the CBER. Finally, and to drive the continued advancement of our first-in-class inhaled asthma therapeutic protein, we're pleased to have brought on board Dr. Mary Fitzgerald, who joined Pieris as Vice President of Respiratory Medicine. Dr. Fitzgerald previously held senior R&D leadership positions at Argenta Discovery and Pulmogen Therapeutics, where she was responsible for clinical development of inhaled and oral drug candidates for respiratory disorders such as COPD and asthma. Previously, she was employed by Bayer Healthcare for 14 years, most recently as head of pharmacology. So we're thrilled to have Darlene, Lou, and Mary joining our management team as we mature our therapeutic pipeline and establish deeper roots in the U.S. Related to that, in the third quarter, we also moved our corporate headquarters from Germany to Boston. And this places Pieris at the global epicenter of biotechnology, allowing us to take advantage of the significant opportunities and abundance of talent that the Boston-Cambridge area has to offer. So Darlene, Lou, and I, along with a growing team, will be based in Boston, while our drug discovery and protein engineering capabilities will continue in Germany as an integral part of the company's pipeline expansion and product development focus. So I'd now like to report on the status of our three fully proprietary Anticalin programs and provide an overview of recent announcements and potentially upcoming milestones. First, we have PRS-080, which is an Anticalin that antagonizes a small protein called hepcidin, known as the master regulator of iron mobilization. We believe a key differentiator over in-class competition is an optimized half-life to achieve a desired PK/PD result. And in the third quarter, Pieris completed a blinded, placebo-controlled, single ascending dose clinical trial of PRS-080 in healthy volunteers to evaluate primarily the compound's safety and tolerability and pharmacokinetic profile. We recently reported that an abstract summarizing the phase one data was accepted for an oral presentation on December 7th at the American Society of Hematology, ASH, annual meeting in Orlando, Florida, when Pieris will present detailed unblinded data from this trial. An abstract summarizing the top line data from this trial is available on the ASH website, and this reports that in the phase one study, PRS-080 was well tolerated. There were no serious adverse events reported. In addition, the drug candidate demonstrated, as predicted and desired, a three-day half-life in the healthy study population. Moreover, the mode of action of the drug candidate in healthy subjects was confirmed, as within 1 hour following administration of PRS-080, there was a marked decrease in plasma hepcidin, followed by the elevation of serum iron concentration and transferrin saturation. We also showed that the duration of serum iron elevation and transferrin saturation increased in a dose-dependent manner. We look forward to providing more details on PRS-080 at our ASH presentation, as well as advancing this program quickly into the targeted patient population. We plan to initiate our first inpatient clinical trial by the end of 2015 in end-stage renal disease patients who exhibit a functional iron-deficient phenotype. And we then plan to quickly follow this up with a multi-ascending dose trial in the same patient population. Now, given the biomarker-rich nature of this pathway, which we believe has been demonstrated already in the phase one study, and our intent to monitor changes in hemoglobin levels during the multi-ascending dose portion of the trial, we hope to generate a lot of program value through these next two clinical studies. Turning to the next program, we have PRS-060, which is our inhaled Anticalin program to treat uncontrolled asthmatics by targeting IL-4 receptor alpha directly in the lung. We believe this drug candidate could offer a number of benefits over subcutaneously administered antibodies, given in particular that the manifestation of disease in asthma patients is on lung epithelial cells. In the last quarter, one of our scientific advisors, Professor Gary Anderson of the University of Melbourne, presented positive preclinical data on PRS-060 at a podium presentation at the annual meeting of the European Respiratory Society, ERS. These data demonstrated concentration-dependent antagonism of IL-4 receptor alpha-mediated signaling, low in silico predicted immunogenicity, as well as the technical feasibility of PRS-060 for inhalation as a wet aerosol or a dry powder. In addition, pharmacokinetic analysis demonstrated the absence of accumulation and rapid renal clearance in mice as intended to spare subjects of on-target off-tissue engagement outside of the lung. Now, in terms of continued development for this program, our second quarter financing has allowed us to enter the formal CMC manufacturing and first-in-man readiness process for this program. And we presently plan to carry out this phase one trial with a nebulized Anticalin formulation. And Dr. Fitzgerald, who joined us this summer, is already very deeply involved in moving this process forward as quickly as possible. Lastly, I'd like to talk about our third and final fully proprietary program from the 300 series. And this is our immuno-oncology multi-specifics approach. And it's showcased by our lead program, PRS-343, a CD137 HER2 bispecific that is intended to activate tumor-specific T cells in the tumor microenvironment and to offer a broader therapeutic window to solid tumor patients compared to anti-CD137 antibody drug candidates currently in clinical development. We recently presented multiple comprehensive data sets at prestigious oncology conferences for this program, which depict intended mode of action for our drug candidates, pharmacodynamic data, and desired drug-like properties for these different drug candidates. In mid-September, at the inaugural International Cancer Immunotherapy Conference in New York City, we presented data showing that all four of the bispecific variants under investigation demonstrated desired biophysical properties and that several of these molecules were able to activate T cells ex vivo as a function of engagement of HER2 on HER2-positive tumor cells. Importantly, the unique geometries of each drug candidate led to pronounced differences in the level of T cell activation, highlighting the importance of structure and geometry when designing bispecifics. And just last week, we presented additional preclinical data at SITC, the Society for the Immunotherapy of Cancer meeting, as well as at the AACR-NCIERTC Oncology Triple Conference in Boston for PRS-343 drug candidates. These data demonstrate that the drug candidates have desirable drug-like properties with respect to long-term stability. They have antibody-like pharmacokinetics or half-life in mice and cynomolgus monkeys, and they have a favorable immunogenicity profile based on ex vivo analysis. Importantly, we also presented for the first time data demonstrating that our Anticalin-based bispecifics stimulate tumor-targeted immune responses distinct from conventional anti-CD137 monoclonal antibodies, where unlike the tested benchmark antibodies, PRS-343 is able to activate T cells in the presence of HER2 high expressing tumor cell lines, but not HER2 low expressing cell lines. These data, we believe, confirm the intended mode of action for PS-343. And I should mention also that poster presentations from these conferences can be found on our website at pyrrhus.com. So for PRS-343, our development objective remains to achieve drug candidate nomination by the end of 2015 and to enter clinical trials in solid tumor cancer patients as quickly as possible, which we are predicting to be IND ready prior to the end of 2017. Now, I hope from today's summary of our fully proprietary pipeline, you've seen that Pyrrhus has a strong pipeline of candidates, and this is complemented by several partner programs. And our partner programs continue to advance, and our announcement in July, for example, of the achievement of our third milestone payment for our second Daiichi Sankyo program which is the seventh milestone overall within our Daiichi collaboration. This is a good example of such progression of our partner programs. The Daiichi Sankyo collaboration continues to run extremely well, and we presently estimate that the first program in this collaboration can enter phase one clinical studies by the end of this year, which will bring further validation of the Anticalin drug class in man and, of course, additional milestone income. So this concludes the corporate update. I'd now like to hand over to Darlene, who will guide you through our third quarter financial results.
Thank you, Steve. Let me begin by saying that the company's financial results for the third quarter ended September 30th, 2015, were in line with our expectations. We recognized revenue of $0.4 million for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2015, compared with essentially no revenue in the 3 months ended September 30th, 2014. This $0.4 million increase in revenue was primarily due to a milestone achieved in the 2015 third quarter compared to no milestones reached in the corresponding quarter of 2014. Research and development expenses were $2.1 million and $0.9 million for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2015 and 2014, respectively. The $1.1 million increase in R&D expense quarter over quarter is primarily due to $5 million increase in consulting expenses, lab supplies, and personnel costs associated with our 300 series program. Our PRS-060 program expenses increased by about $2.2 million due to increased preclinical efforts involving research studies. Other R&D expenses increased $0.4 million, primarily resulting from personnel and recruiting costs related to increasing our research and development efforts. General and administrative expenses were $2.2 million and $0.9 million for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2015 and 2014, respectively. This $1.3 million increase resulted primarily from $0.8 million of legal, consulting, insurance, investor relations, and board fees associated with being a public company. The increase also included $0.4 million of stock-based compensation expense in the 2015 third quarter. There was no stock-based compensation expense in the 2014 corresponding quarter. Other administrative costs, including personnel and travel-related costs, increased by $0.1 million in the 3 months ending September 30th, 2015, compared to the 2014 period. The net loss in the third quarter of 2015 was approximately $3.9 million, or 10 cents per basic and diluted share, as compared to a net loss of $2 million, or 17 cents per basic and diluted share for the third quarter of 2014. Our average shares outstanding for the third quarter were 38.9 million shares, up from 11.8 million shares in the same quarter of 2014, attributable to our December 2014 private placement and July 2015 public offering. Now, turning to the balance sheet, total cash and cash equivalents as of the third quarter ended September 30th, 2015, totaled $32.3 million, as compared to approximately $18.5 million at year-end 2014. In July, we raised a gross amount of $28.3 million in a successful public offering. This financing enables us to strengthen our balance sheet, further the development of our product pipeline, and pursue our corporate initiatives. We believe with expected revenues and current cash on hand, we have sufficient cash to operate the business and fund our R&D programs into 2017. With that, I will now turn the call back over to Steve.
Thank you, Darlene. So the third quarter developments of 2015 are a strong indication of the efforts Pieris will put forward throughout the coming years as we continue to apply high energy and dedication to pioneering new, safe, and efficacious therapeutics through the use of our proprietary Anticalin technology. Before I conclude, I would like to thank the entire Pieris team, from our newest colleagues whom we introduced today to those who have been with us for more than a decade. Thank them for their fantastic work during this last quarter, and I want to reiterate my confidence in our management team's ability to continue to execute on our strategic objectives, building value for our shareholders over the long term. So thank you for joining us today, for your continued interest and your support. And we would now like to open up the call to your questions.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that is star 1 to register your questions at this time. Our first question today is coming from Christopher Marai of Oppenheimer. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, guys, and thanks for taking the questions. Congratulations on the quarter and the data presentations. So, you know, first, really with respect to your program in anemia, I was wondering if you could further help me understand, you know, given your sort of PD marker of activity here, that you've presented, how this might translate into patients with anemia. And then two, with respect to going into end-stage renal disease patients, you know, do you expect that the next trial would have a primary endpoint based on a biomarker? Thanks.
Christopher, thanks for the questions. So again, this trial was a phase 1 in healthy volunteers in a single ascending dose, but we did see data biomarker driven that does confirm our intended mode of action for this drug. And so our intended patient population will be patients who are in the dialysis centers, you know, 3 times a week. They will have increased levels of hepcidin, and they will have high levels of ferritin and moderate to low TSAT evaluation parameters. And our design remains consistent, which is to observe those patients on therapies over in a multi-ascending dose trial over a 4-week exposure to therapy. The precise clinical trial design is still under discussion. Precisely how frequently the drug is administered is also under discussion. But to get to your second question, our objective remains to have the multi-ascending dose trial over a sufficient amount of time, more than 2 weeks up to 4 weeks of exposure to therapy, to look ideally at hemoglobin levels as an endpoint. We do expect that there are other biomarker-relevant readouts that we will observe and we will monitor, including the reticulocyte concentration of hemoglobin, as well as looking at serum iron levels, of course, ferritin levels, TSATs, and, of course, hepcidin levels. So all of that combined, we think, will give us a pretty good assessment of the ability of this drug to work at various doses as a function of PK/PD. And that's pretty consistent with what we've been saying, and the phase 1 data, I think, only allow us to conclude that we're excited to move straight into patients as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Great. And then just maybe a follow-up. Remind us maybe if you've seen any signs of immunogenicity in patients here with respect to your anti-Kaelin technology. And then with respect to your 300 series bispecific, do you anticipate seeing any of that? How did the data look there in terms of any potential, you know, preclinical signals of immunogenicity? And then finally, on the 300 series, you know, obviously you're targeting, you know, HER2 positive types of tumors. You know, is there a particular tumor type you're looking to go into, or a particular path forward that you've defined that might offer, you know, a rapid route to registration should you see signals of efficacy? Thank you.
Okay, I'm just getting these questions out. So you asked about immunogenicity for the anemia program, and then preclinical
yes.
data on 343, and then the intended patient population on HER2 positive tumors for 343, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so you know, we haven't obviously disclosed the full data set for a PRS-080. That's what the ASH presentation is all about. I can tell you that we did not see anything that gave us any pause to move this program forward from an immunogenicity perspective for PRS-080, and there will be more discussion on that at the ASH presentation. So overall, we're very pleased with how those data looked. With respect to PRS-343, we actually have some ex vivo PBMC analysis that we presented at the SITC conference, and there, benchmarking ourselves against trastuzumab, which is regarded as a very quiet, non-immunogenic antibody, we were actually able to show a very comparable immunogenicity profile or lack thereof. And that you can see in the SITC poster, which is available online. And I should say that highlights one of the benefits of the Pieris anti-Kalin platform, which is we are able to generate a highly diverse panel of candidates where we select for not just potency, but drug-like properties across the board. So that allows us to screen and select for candidates that have a good expressibility, manufacturability profile, lack of aggregation, high stability, and of course, the lack of T-cell hotspots. And so we're seeing those data bear out in an ex vivo setting for PRS-343, where again, we're very pleased with the immunogenicity data, our analysis we've generated for all four of the preclinical candidates under evaluation. And then lastly, for the question around the clinical path for the PRS-343 CD137 HER2 molecule, we will obviously be going forward in HER2-positive tumors. There are a number of them. Importantly, what we want to do is align patient population not just as a function of HER2 expression levels, but also as a function of how much of a TIL, tumor-infiltrating lymphocyte component there is in the tumor beds of those patients. And so after triangulating around those different parameters, we believe there are a number of solid tumors where there is a high unmet medical need in patients who are, for example, HER2 positive in a plus two Herceptin test setting that are not responding to current therapies. This includes different types of breast cancer. This includes gastric cancer. This includes ovarian, cervical cancer, to name some of them. And we're going to pursue, you know, an all-comers trial, most likely going into our first inpatient, and then let the data really dictate how we're going to go forward from there. But suffice to say, there are, we believe, a number of HER2-positive tumors with an unmet medical need that have the requisite TIL component that we think will be needed to drive an effective response with our therapy. I hope that answered the question. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Once again, that is star one to register any questions at this time. Our next question is coming from David Bouts of Zacks Investment Research. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning,
David. In regards to the immuno-oncology platform, I'm wondering, first of all, when we might hear about the other targets that are being targeted by the company, and then maybe if you could walk us through what went into choosing those targets. The immuno-oncology field is getting kind of crowded, and with the anti-Kalin platform, you could essentially target anything. So I was wondering if you just walk through some of the things that you thought about in regards to what you wanted to target with that.
Sure. No. Thanks a lot, David. Well, I can say at the outset, our primary commitment in the immuno-oncology space remains PRS-343, because we believe that's the path for maximum value creation for the company and for shareholders to go get advanced preclinical and then patient data as quickly as possible. In terms of when we're going to publicly disclose the other targets, which are in our IO pipeline, we haven't yet decided on the optimal date. We don't think we need to do that to further any near-term corporate objectives. And we have filed IP on most of them, but are not going to have any IP publications in the very near term. So we're not disclosing yet the time when we will make those publicly available. But more importantly, I think to your question around how we go about choosing our targets, well, as you noted, I mean, anti-Kalins are very good at target engagement. So it's not a question of whether we can hit a target. It's why would we hit that target to drive differentiation over monoclonal antibodies. And we believe there are a number of targets, largely in the co-stim space, you know, like CD137 is a co-stim. Although our preclinical, our earlier pipeline is not exclusively limited to co-stims, also includes other checkpoints. We believe that the ability to have bivalent bispecifics, where you can tailor the geometry and the synapse between a tumor-targeting moiety and a and a T-cell targeting moiety, or for that matter, two T-cell targeting moieties, we believe that there are targets where those benefits of bivalent bispecificity are going to bring differentiation, and that is what's informing our target selection process. As a reminder, Pieris is not a target validation company, so we're not focusing our resources in finding brand new checkpoints. I think that's for other companies. We're focused on exploiting more known biology in novel ways, and our CD137 bispecific approach is a perfect example of that, we believe.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to turn the floor back over to Mr. Yoder for any additional or closing comments.
Yeah, so thank you all for your time and for your questions today. We look forward to the remaining months in 2015 with excitement. We're well-positioned financially. We have great drug candidates and a talented team with the experience to execute on both sides of the Atlantic. So we look forward to keeping you updated on our progress, and thank you for joining today. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a wonderful day.